Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Mike Pello. I, along with Shawna Bagan, represent the appellant, Jeffrey Swander, in this matter. There's a great deal of information in this trial. This was a case that was tried twice. It hung the first time. Great deal of information in the briefs. What I would like to do, obviously, I want to answer any questions regarding any of the issues raised in the briefs. If the court has any questions on those, I would like to break it down into three large areas. It's a little bit different than how we broke it down in the briefs. What I would refer to as the constitutional argument about the limitation on the right to present a complete defense, which involves cross-examination of the co-defendant, Clay Cole, and which also involves limitations on the expert testimony in this case. The second large category would be other trial errors, other limitations on cross-examination, 404B issue that occurred during the trial, during the cross-examination of Clay Cole, records, phone records, and the final large area would be the concern of restitution. Arson investigators, over a course of many years, have had the opportunity to observe and document that most fire setters are not financially motivated. There is a very large number of fire setters, almost half, that are what are considered revenge fire setters. The label's not what's important, however. What's important is a certain number of people, almost half, are motivated by a fascination and a compulsion with fire and with fire setting, with fire itself. And we were allowed to go into some of the characteristics that are observed with these type of fire setters. Some of the common characteristics observed in these type of fire setters are substance abuse issues, being undereducated or uneducated, being unemployed or working as a laborer, returning to the scene of a fire that was set. These kinds of things we were allowed to explore on cross-examination and explore with our expert. However, the most important characteristic and the one that was denied to us on cross-examination and on direct examination with our expert witness is the history, the connection of a person to other fires, to family members, to close friends, connections to fires. We had evidence, and we, in offers of proof, in replies to the people's motion to exclude certain evidence, we laid this out, we argued this extensively in front of the trial court. We wished to present evidence of Clay Cole, who was the co-defendant, who was the key witness in this case, as to his connection to other fires, to establish his motivation in setting the fire in this case.
What kind of connection?
So, some of them, obviously, it could not even be argued that he had set the fire. One was a fire that his sister was killed in before he was born.
I mean, it can't even be argued that he saw the fire.
Correct. But it would have been argued by us that this was something that was discussed within his family. He was aware of this.
And you know that, and there was evidence that was offered as a part of a foundation that this was a topic of family discussion.
Correct. And this was something we would have wanted to explore with Mr. Cole. Not did you set that fire? Obviously he didn't. He couldn't have. But what was your understanding of this fire? How often was this discussed? How large a part of this was it in your family, in your upbringing? How much of a part of your person did this have influence?
And assuming for the sake of argument that it is relevant and should have been admitted, how was he prejudiced if he admits that he started the fire?
So the whole argument is, why did Clay Cole set the fire? The prosecution's theory was Clay Cole set the fire because Jeffrey Swander told him to. And the prosecution argued, why else would he do it unless Jeffrey Swander told him to? Our theory is Clay Cole has his own fascination, his own compulsion with fire, which causes him to set a fire. So a jury looking at the evidence could say, well, there was an insult. Jeffrey Swander insulted him. when Mr. Cole said, well, can I rent this property? And he said, you can't afford your own place. I'm having to support you. You can't even take care of yourself. There's an insult. There is controlling behavior by Mr. Swander. There's the fact that Clay Cole was intoxicated at the time. But a jury could look at all these things and go, well, that wouldn't cause someone to set a fire. And they may be right, because they're being denied the most key, the most critical component of that, which is this person has his own fascination with and compulsion to set fires, separate and apart, totally separate and apart from Jeffrey Swander. And this person, unlike the rest of us, has this fascination, this compulsion already at work on him to set a fire. He's angry at Jeffrey Swander. He's intoxicated. All of these things form the complete picture of who Clay Cole was at that moment and why he would set this particular fire. And that's why this evidence was so relevant. It makes much more likely the fact that he set the fire for his own reasons, totally separate from any financial inducement.
Counsel?
Yes.
It seems like all those other things you mentioned, the insults and this revenge motive, that sort of thing, is much more relevant to motive for this fire than a fire. And it seems like what you wanted to admit was just motive to set a fire, but I'm failing to see how this evidence that you're talking about shows at all why he started this fire.
Because these things that we introduced, insults and being under the influence, those kinds of things, might not affect Joe Blow in the way it would affect Clay Cole. Why? Why is that the case? Why did this induce him to set this particular fire? Because he has his own background, his own history, his own fascination with fire. Somebody insults me and I've been drinking, I'm not going to go and set a fire. I have no family history. I have no connection, not only to the fire where his sister died, but fires at his mother's house, fire of his girlfriend's car, people close to him affected by fire. That fire investigator, and we made this offer of proof, which was never disputed, the prosecution never disputed our offer of proof, that arson investigators have observed these common characteristics coming together to induce someone to set a fire. That's our theory. This fire was set here because of the combination of all of these things.
And counsel, I understand, but I guess what I'm having trouble just getting past from a logical standpoint is, you've got evidence of a fire before he was born. You've got evidence of a fire at his mother's house. He wasn't even there, it was somewhere else. You've got evidence of a fire at his former girlfriend's car. And you take all that and you call it a fascination with fire. It shows he has experience that people close to him have experienced fires. But how does it show on his part a fascination with fire?
And your question is a good one, because it shows what the normal juror will be thinking. An expert could educate the jury, which obviously under 702 they have to be able to do, that these family characteristics, these historical characteristics, often form a fascination in a person. Did it with Clay Cole? That's something we should have been allowed to go into on cross-examination. Did it with Clay Cole? You brought up an interesting point that he wasn't even present for one of the fires. That we don't know. The DA's office interviewed him. He denied any responsibility for that fire and said he was out of town. We don't know. And we shouldn't have to just accept an out-of-court statement that Clay Cole made to the DA's office. This is something we should have been allowed to explore on cross-examination of him.
So you're going to cross-examine him on whether he caused another fire. Sounds like we're getting pretty far afield. The tail's going to wag the dog here at this trial.
But the cross-examination would have been, and that's why I say his connection to the other fire. Could we say definitively he set any of those fires? No. We could say definitively he did not set one fire, which was one before he was born. But what we wanted to explore with him is his connection to these fires and how they influenced him and whether they did cause a fascination or a compulsion to set a fire. That we were totally prohibited from even exploring. Could a jury reject that? A jury could reject that, but to deny us the ability to even go into it, to present any evidence, to cross-examine at all on it, to have the expert witness opine on it at all, prevented us from presenting a complete defense.
Wasn't revenge a much better motive to present to the jury?
And the fire investigators, as I said, and I said the label's not so important, but they characterize financially motivated versus revenge fire setters. And one thing they observe in common characteristics of revenge fire setters is the historical background.
Well, the Martini incident certainly was relevant for purposes of arguing revenge, but you objected to that.
Yes. Well, the Martini incident forced Mr. Swander to defend on two different things. Talk about the tail wagging the dog. He forced him to defend on felony arson as well as felony assault charges. And to say that somehow inured to his benefit clearly did not inure.
Well, but that goes directly to the revenge. Mr. Cole was feeling mistreated by Mr. Swander, and as an example of that, he was badly cut by him, according to the evidence that was going to be presented, so that why actually did come in.
That's a theory that could play into the revenge. First, we dispute that ever happened. That was a fabrication of Clay Cole, we believe. Second, we never had any notice, and to spring this on you at trial, unnoticed, unargued 404B, is clearly prejudicial to the defendant. This didn't work to his benefit that this somehow made the jury, because it was years prior. It had nothing to do with this particular case. He didn't, you know, Mr. Cole didn't say one had any connection to the other, and there was no connection between the two.
What you're saying, none of what you said, it goes at all to Mr. Zwander and what his motives were, and whether he is more or less likely to have induced Mr. or requested that Mr. Cole set the fire. You're looking at it entirely from Mr. Cole's perspective, not from the defendant's perspective.
Correct. And we were allowed to present evidence.
Okay.
I'm not arguing that we weren't regarding Mr. Swander and whether he had a financial motivation or not.
So even if, let's say Mr. Cole was somewhat more inclined to set fires, isn't that consistent with the whole scenario here that Mr. Swander, on apparently a fairly without a lot of thought in advance, asked him on the same day he discovered that the house was a mess to set the fire, and perhaps maybe Mr. Cole was predisposed to set a fire, but nonetheless, it still goes back to Mr. Swander's asking him to do so.
Well, one of the key things on that is Mr. Cole, our argument was that Mr. Swander did not put him up to it, that he was not motivated by getting insurance. And the jury implicitly went with our theory, not the prosecution, when they acquitted him on count two, which charged him with setting the fire for insurance purposes, insurance fraud purposes. He was found not guilty of that. So implicitly, at least, the jury said, well, we're not buying the prosecution's theory. They didn't get to hear all of our theory, so they couldn't find, well, Clay Cole has this fascination with fire. He decided to do this on his own, partly because of wanting revenge, and partly because of who he is as a person. They never got to hear all of who he is as a person. We were not allowed to explore that at all. I would ask to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal if I could.
Thank you, counsel.
May it please the court, my name is Jillian Price, registration number 40815, and I represent the people. It is undisputed that Clayton Cole set the fire. The critical issue at trial was why he did it. Swander presented ample evidence to show that Cole may have had his own personal reasons for setting the fire, and none of the trial court's evidentiary rulings prevented him from advancing or fully developing that theory at trial. Nor were any of the other alleged errors in this case, did they rise to the level of reversible error, and therefore this court should affirm. Turning first to the issue of whether Cole had the traits of an arsonist, this evidence was properly excluded in this case as irrelevant. Again, there is no dispute that Mr. Cole set the fire. The fact that he had the traits of an arsonist in a case where identity was disputed may be relevant to show that it was more or less likely that a specific person set the fire. But again, There was no such identity dispute here.
Counsel, as I understand Mr. Swander's counsel's argument, it is that there is this revenge motive out there, and of course they were allowed to present evidence of that, but that the evidence that they wanted to present about the traits of arsonists was, they wanted to present that to bolster that theory, because yes, people get mad, you know, at other people, but not everyone in response to that sets a fire to their building. So that's how I understand it. So why isn't that relevant?
So if I understand you correctly, and Mr. Pello's argument that having the traits of an arsonist, assuming that Cole did, would have tipped him over the edge in combination with the revenge. Now, if he simply had the traits of an arsonist, that by itself still would not have explained why he set this fire to this house at this particular time, why he set this fire after Swander discovered that the tenants had trashed it and left without paying any back rent. Having the traits of an arsonist would not have tipped the scale in Mr. Swander's favor as far as this defense is concerned. Having the traits of an arsonist, again, would go towards the fact that Cole set the fire, which simply was not disputed. We already have that information. The jury already knew that Mr. Cole set the fire. So having the traits of an arsonist simply wasn't relevant to the issue in dispute. What the jury did hear was all of the revenge motives that Mr. Cole may have had. Again, we already know that Mr. Cole set this fire.
Well, Ms. Price, you'd have to also lay the foundation that you didn't only have the trait of an arsonist, but that you had the trait of an arsonist who randomly set fires.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I don't believe that there was anything in Mr. Swander's proffer that differentiated between random fire setters. We have revenge fire setters and financially motivated fires, but there's nothing in the proffer that specifically says that Mr. Cole was absolutely not a random fire setter. What the defense was able to present and cross-examine on were all of the revenge motives that Mr. Cole had. He was angry with Mr. Swander. He was frustrated at Mr. Swander. He bore resentment towards Mr. Swander. All of these things, in combination with the known fact that Mr. Cole set the fire, amply conveyed Mr. Swander's theory of defense as far as Mr. Cole having an independent reason to set the fire. Now, touching on the Martini incident, which was discussed in Mr. Pello's argument, that was not unnoticed 404B evidence. That was not introduced by the prosecution. That was not presented in that fashion at trial. That was a spontaneous statement, excuse me, that Mr. Cole made on cross-examination and to which the defense did not object or move to strike. Now, that testimony, if the nasty message was in fact left in response to the Martini incident, that provides another motive that Cole may have had to set the fire independent of any financial inducement. That would have shown Mr. Cole's anger and frustration and resentment towards Mr. Swander and would have provided him a reason to gain revenge by setting this fire. Now, on the other hand, if that nasty message was not left in response to the Martini incident, and even if the Martini incident never happened, then that goes to Mr. Swander's theory that Mr. Cole acted erratically when he was drunk. And he was drunk on the night of the fire. That, again, is not disputed. So if he did leave this nasty message unconnected to the Martini incident, then that, again, shows that Mr. Cole acted erratically, as he may have done on the night of the fire. This is a rare piece of evidence which, either way it goes, inures to Swander's benefit because it supports his theory that Cole may have had his own independent reasons for setting the fire. With respect to the expert testimony, Mr. Swander wanted to present profile evidence concerning arsonists. He wanted the expert to testify that Mr. Swander did not, quote, fit the profile, and that Mr. Cole did fit the profile. Now, the trial court allowed the expert to testify in general terms as to revenge-motivated fire settings, financially-motivated fire settings. The court allowed those things to come in general terms, and the jury heard Mr. Swander's testimony and Mr. Cole's testimony. There's no reason that the jury could not have linked the general subject matter about which the expert testified with the testimony of Mr. Cole and Mr. Swander. There was no need to go into improper profiling testimony or to allow Mr. Swander to bolster his case by allowing the expert to say that he did not fit that profile. Turning to the other issues that Mr. Swander has raised, he also sought to impeach Mr. Cole with other crimes that he could have, perhaps, but were not charged with as a result of his conduct on the night of the fire. Now, as the people have stated in their brief, this issue was abandoned in as much as it was not reasserted at the second trial. But even if this court determines otherwise, the jury heard that Mr. Cole wanted to make a deal if he could, and that he told police, that police told Cole that his cooperation would be, quote, beneficial with the DA or the judge. The jury had ample evidence, and this again came out through Cole's testimony, to determine that Cole that Cole wanted a deal and the police told him his cooperation would be beneficial. That was sufficient to impeach Mr. Cole's credibility before the jury.
Counsel, at the time of the testimony here, my understanding is that Mr. Cole had already pleaded guilty. Is that correct?
Correct.
Had he already been sentenced?
At the time police told him?
No, at the time of his testimony in this case.
I believe he pled guilty in 2013 and the trial was held in 2014.
Okay.
So I don't recall from the record whether or not he had been sentenced at that point.
And what does the record show more specifically about any discussions between Mr. Cole and prosecutors or the police about his cooperation and how that would affect his plea bargain or his sentence?
There is no specific information in the record. So police told him that his cooperation would be beneficial. Cole walked in saying he would like a deal if he could. There's no specific information that's been presented by Mr. Swander or that I can find in the record that shows the police or the prosecution or anyone from the DA's office ever told him, if you cooperate, we will not charge you with these other crimes. The record is devoid of any specific information that he was not being charged with any crimes because he agreed to testify. And also, with respect to the crimes that Mr. Swander contends Mr. Cole could have been charged with, taking the DUI, for example, again, Cole sat on the stand and said, yes, I was intoxicated for sure, and I shouldn't have been driving that night. Well, there's also no evidence in the record that a breathalyzer test was performed or a blood draw was taken. So it's entirely possible that as the prosecution was deciding what charges that it could or could not press against Mr. Cole, that evidence would have long since expired. With respect to the phone and email records that Mr. Swander sought to produce, the phone records, that was Mr. Swander's call to Sprint. It was not Sprint's business record that it maintained. It was Swander's personal recording of a telephone call that he says he made to Sprint.
Excuse me, counsel, for interrupting, but we've been unable to find that recording in the record. Is that in the record on appeal?
I don't recall that it was in the record. This is mostly described at trial testimony, but I don't recall there being a disc of this recording in our record. Now, because that record is something that Mr. Swander made, it was not kept in Sprint's course of regular business and was not a business record, and the trial court correctly determined that it should not be admitted under that rule. And with respect to the email records, the record shows that those were not authenticated at trial. Perhaps had they been authenticated and all other evidentiary requirements are met, they might have been admissible. But once the prosecution objected on foundational grounds, Mr. Swander did not attempt to lay any further foundation or provide an authentication of those records. So again, on this record, that was a proper ruling by the trial court. Lastly, with respect to restitution, it is very well settled in Colorado that restitution may be awarded for uncharged and acquitted crimes. Mr. Swander was charged with third degree assault, which requires as an element the intent to defraud. Now, the jury did not find beyond a reasonable doubt that Mr. Swander was guilty of that crime, but the standard for restitution is by a preponderance of the evidence. And the preponderance of the evidence in this case, and as outlined in the people's brief, shows that restitution was properly ordered because Mr. Swander filed a fraudulent claim against his insurance company and then sued that insurance company when they denied it.
Is the restitution award supported by the conviction for the that he received on the second degree arson charge? The arson charge.
The arson charge.
By itself.
Not by itself, but again, he was charged with the third degree arson, and
I understand. But so you're saying that the it would not be supported that the monies that were paid by the insurance company did not flow from the actual arson.
That the monies that the insurance company paid did flow from the actual arson. Mr. Swander's proximately caused those monies to be paid by inducing Mr. Cole to set the fire, filing the claim against his insurance company, and then suing the insurance company when they denied that claim. All of those monies that were paid, all of those actions that were taken, were proximately caused by Mr. Swander's action in inducing Cole to set the fire. And it's the third degree arson charge, just so that I'm clear, the third degree arson charge specifically includes the intent to defraud, and that is what specifically ties the ties this to Country Mutual's the money spent on defending its claim against Swander. But all of this has its genesis in Mr. Swander's decision to induce Cole to set the fire.
Ms. Price, the restitution order here was entered jointly and severally, is that right?
Correct.
Giving the insurance company a right to look to Mr. Cole for amounts unpaid.
Correct. Unless this court hasn't...
Just for clarification, though, convicted in another matter, a totally different case, correct?
Mr. Cole or Mr. Swander?
Mr. Cole.
Yes.
And wasn't there an effort to modify the was there an effort to modify the restitution order in that case after the restitution order was issued against in this case?
I know that there was a motion to amend Mr. Cole's restitution order. I believe it's outlined in Mr. Swander's reply brief that motion was denied. Further information as to why that happened is not in this record, and I'm afraid I don't have a transcript of Mr. Cole's hearing, so I cannot tell this court why that motion was denied. But the fact remains that in this case, the trial court did order the restitution to be joint and several between Swander and Cole. Unless this court has any further questions on any of the issues that has been raised, the people respectfully request that you affirm Mr. Swander's convictions. Thank you.
Well, my time with you is brief, so Ms. Price remarked on this evidence went to whether or not Mr. Cole was an arsonist. Obviously, we wouldn't have spent all the time and effort disputing that. There was no disputing he was the arsonist. The whole question was why. And there was prejudice to the defense in this case by the complete elimination of any ability to explore with the expert witness, for instance, not investigating. Why wasn't this investigated? There are other fires connected to Mr. Cole. Could this have had something to do with his acting in this case? And one thing I want to emphasize is the very close nature of this case. This was a very close case. It hung the first time it was tried. Mr. Swander was acquitted of half of the charges the second time it was tried, after the jury spent a lot of time at, returned a verdict after midnight on a Saturday morning. This was a very close case, and that's one of the things the court should look at as far as a harmless error analysis. We did raise the cumulative nature, which would include all of these things, the limits on cross, the limits on any evidence of other fires, the limits on exploring this with the expert witness. All of those kind of form the totality of what we were not allowed to explore as far as why this particular fire was set, why Mr. Cole set this particular fire. Based on all of the record and all of the arguments, we are going to ask the court to reverse Mr. Swander's conviction in this matter. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel, for your arguments today. Case will stand submitted. We'll issue an opinion in due course, and that will just